Okay, well, welcome everybody. Welcome to another presentation of the online Cold Fusion Meetup. Sorry, that picture shouldn't be me. Sorry, that should be Simon. My name is Charlie Earhart, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. Today, we continue our series of CF United conference preview sessions, and I just want to point out we have six of these scheduled over the next 6 weeks. Last week, I started things out with a preview of my talk called New in CFMX 6 and 7, What Did You Miss? And that's been recorded, as all these will be recorded. This week, we have the inimitable Simon Horwith giving his talk on architecting and optimizing Cold Fusion applications for performance and scalability. And again, these are previews of day-long talks, eight-hour-long talks, so it's just a very small taste of what he's going to cover on the day. So just real quickly, introduction to the meetups for those that are new to it. The meetups are basically an online Cold Fusion user group, and it's something that Ray Camden and I stepped up to revive earlier this year. This is about the fifth meeting that we've had in the past 3 or 4 weeks. You can learn more about the meetup at this URL. It's just coldfusion.meetup.com. Unfortunately, there are two other Cold Fusion meetups that meet physically, one in DC and one in Pittsburgh. So ours is the third of those, and it's the number 17 if you want to just try that URL directly. The point about the meetup site is that there, you, if you join, it's free. You get notices about all our upcoming meetings. There's a place for you to RSVP and let us know you're coming. It lets you share feedback, which we'll tell you about at the end of the meeting. Or if you are a member of the meetup, you'll get an email at the end saying don't forget to come and rate the meeting. And the meetings are currently not something that we do on a regular schedule, except that for the next 6 weeks, we are going to do weekly these previews of CF United conference. After that, we may go to weekly or biweekly even, or we'll see. All the meetings are recorded, so the URL for the recording is not going to be the meetup.com address, and it's not going to be the experts.acrobat.com address. It's going to be a different address specific to the meeting, and that URL will be posted on the meetup site in the meetup message board. So if you are interested in the URL for the meeting, if you're a member of the meetup, or if you just go to the meetup site, you should be able to see the messages. I think you may have to be a member to see the messages. Also, if you, for some reason, just don't want to become a member, always on my site called careheart.org/UGTV, you're able to see all previous recordings. The conference, CF United, is coming up at the end of June. It's labeled the Premier Cold Fusion Conference, and it's organized by Michael Smith and Terratech, and it's a four-day-long conference. It's 3 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, plus a bonus day on Saturday where they repeat the sessions that were most popular from the week. There's also these day-long classes. Again, this is a preview of one of the day-long classes. There's 2 days of day-long classes, one set of classes on Monday, another on Tuesday. There's also Birds of a Feather and all kinds of events and a big vendor area with all kinds of community stuff. It's a great conference for those who haven't been. You definitely should check it out. There's more than 40 speakers and over 60 sessions. Again, the dates are June 27th to 30th, the end of June, and the day-long classes are on the Monday and Tuesday of that week. If you want to learn more about the conference, it's at cfunited.com. So, on to our presentation. So we've got a talk from Simon Horwith, who is the CIO of About Web LLC, which is a consulting company up in D.C. He's the editor-in-chief of the Cold Fusion Developers Journal magazine, as well as an Adobe-certified master instructor, a member of the Community Experts Program, and he's been using Cold Fusion since 1.5. He specializes in working with Cold Fusion application architecture. Many of you have seen him speak at user groups and conferences all over the world. He's a contributor to several books and papers, and he's got a blog at Horwith.com, www.horwith.com. And so with that, we'll turn the mic over to Simon, and I'll send him a note to let him know it's time for him to talk. That was very funny, Abdul. Yeah, and the sad part is that he can't hear me saying, Simon, we can't hear you. Hopefully he's looking at the chat window and seeing how bad it is, but it's really bad. And it was sounding great earlier. So let me just speak up for those who will be watching the recording later and detecting this long silence. It's that we seem to be having some trouble with Simon contacting us.
You guys hear me okay? Well, I don't hear you, but it looks like you're getting audio from me. Is that right?
Yeah, well, we can do one of two things. I can talk, and you guys can ignore the buzz, or we can try it again. Because of the where I am off-site, I have no internet, so I'm doing this through a singular card, and I was actually doing it from outside of a restaurant that had wireless, and my battery died. So I have now... I actually drove across the street to a bar that has a restaurant that is never very busy, and rebooted, and I'm back on Singular, but there's something in this restaurant that's causing electrical interference. Is the buzzing too terrible for everybody or not? Okay, I think we're all ready to go. Everybody set? Yep, yeah, you should be looking at a preview of architecting and coding CF apps for performance, scalability, and maintainability. All right, well, I know we lost a little time here, so I'll try to make haste and get right to the point. So basically, this presentation is supposed to be a preview of what I'm going to be talking about. So just grabbed bits and pieces of different slides from the presentation itself, or what I've written of it so far. So target audience, definitely architects, pretty much any developers, team leads. I've done topics very similar to this several times at different conferences, and I try to change it each time, and I've done some where it's all very focused on more administrators and, you know, just fine-tuning server stuff. I've done some where it's very code-centric, some where there's almost no code, and it's all testing and load testing and such. And I'm going to try and do a little bit of each, hopefully you guys can hear me. The topics that I'm talking about that day, whole bunch of topics. The whole point of the presentation is really to try to help developers understand and recognize the things they can do to be more successful as developers and more successful on projects. Defining success is a major thing you really do in the very beginning. But then I kind of, in a very broad sense, I cover, I'm going to do a couple different exercises and units that deal with architecture, how to actually architect an application, what that means, and how to plan the application and plan how you're going to implement the architecture, the actual implementation itself, which is more of the nitty-gritty coding, how you write the code, how you can make things more efficient in your code, and so on and so forth. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in detail. But specifically, I talk about code for, I'm just reading the pod here, a lot of delays with the audio, huh? I talk about the code with from a maintainability and performance point of view. I also will talk about how you test and measure performance. I'll try to talk a little slower. I have a tendency to talk fast, and that might be why it's choppy. Does this sound a little better? I'll try to talk a little slower then. I forget bandwidth limits, especially when you're on a Singular card. I'll talk about the things you can do in your code to make it more maintainable, to improve performance, all that kind of thing. And I'm also going to talk about how you can optimize things on the server side itself. Just real quick, before I give you some little snippets of technical information, the session itself is on Tuesday, June 26th. It's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's at the same hotel as CF United, the Bethesda North Marriott. It's not included in the cost, so TerraTech, is charging extra for people to come to full day classes. But the classes and all the classes really, I'm sure, are well worth the cost. It's going to be a hands-on session all day. If you have a laptop, please do bring it. I'm also encouraging people, if they have code, if they have some requirements that they need to implement, if they have some other issues on the job, bring that with you. We'll see how what we're talking about might help you with what you're trying to do. We'll try to, in some way, shape, or form, help you out with whatever your problem is. The other thing definitely to bring, and anybody who's done full day or 3 day classes with me will tell you, definitely bring a good attitude. I like to mix things up, have fun, get you on your feet, and do a lot of fun exercises and such. It's not just sit and listen to me talk or, sit and write code for 8 hours straight. Try to make it as entertaining as possible. The topics I'm going to talk about with regards to performance, maintainability, and scalability, obviously it's going to be pretty much all ColdFusion MX, both MX and 7. I just got the go-ahead to let people know that I'm going to be also talking about what you will want to be doing on Scorpio. So we're gonna really get into how architecture and coding, you know, best practices in terms of optimizing it for maintainability, performance, scalability, that kind of thing. How Scorpio, you know, changes that. So I was really glad to be able to do that and let you guys know about it. We will be changing the actual session description on the CP United site to make it clear that we will cover Scorpio as well. Okay, so I thought I'd spend the rest of this time just giving you little snippets of you know, kind of sound bites of useful information that are taken from various parts of the full day's worth of materials. One of the things is measuring success. That is one of the most important skills to have, one of the most important things to be able to do, and it's really it's really important to at least agree with your boss and the other developers and the clients and anybody else involved in a project on how you are going to measure success. There are four primary ways I like to classify success: scalability, reliability, extensibility, and timeliness. So basically, whether an app will scale, whether or not it consistently does exactly what you would expect it to do, whether or not it's easy to maintain and extend that code base, and obviously whether or not you deliver the code on time is always important to somebody somewhere. So the real secret is really recognizing, you know, understanding that there are different ways to measure success, and you know, knowing that, you know, the way you gauge success on an app is not going to be the same as the way your boss does, or the way the client does, or your manager. You really need to find out what everybody's expectations are and how they're going to judge what you've done. So I talk throughout the full day really about I relate everything I do back to how this affects one or many of those four different ways you can measure success. And how you decide you're going to do that really determines where you're going to put some of your priorities as well, in an application. So the session is supposed to be about performance and scalability, so I did think it was probably good that I should at least go ahead right here and define that for you. Performance is obviously, we pretty much all know what it is, but, it can easily be described as a measure of how long it takes for an application to do something that you ask it to do. You know, that's how it performs. Scalability is actually a measure of how performance is affected by load. And what a lot of people, a lot of developers, and certainly a lot of non-technical people tend to make the mistake of when they talk about these things, they really don't realize that just because something scales doesn't really mean it's always going to be fast. When load increases, performance is supposed to degrade. I mean, obviously, it has to degrade. That's kind of like a laws of physics kind of thing. But an application that is scalable is going to consistently, see its performance decrease in a direct ratio to the amount of load increasing. And as you decrease that load, and this is the most important part, as you decrease that load, you should see the performance, again, on a, an even parallel kind of ratio, you should see it, get better and better. Those are the applications that actually scale well. When you have, and why is that, you say, a lot of people ask me, well, what's the point in having an application that you know is going to bomb out with enough load? Well, every application will bomb out with enough load. An application that's designed well, that's architected well, coded well, and that scales well, making those support an infinite amount of bandwidth, of load, is really a matter of adding more servers to the pool of servers that serve it up. Every single machine does have its threshold. An application that scales well, the more machines you start running it on in a cluster, the more load you can handle. Now, performance and scalability, I talk a lot in the session about how to improve it. One of the first things you always have to do is recognize what causes problems with performance and scalability. And there are a lot of things, not just the code. Hardware has quite a bit to do with it. It can have everything to do with it, really. The way you've configured your Cold Fusion server and your Java virtual machine that it runs on has a lot to do with it. Obviously, the code itself does, you know, just not writing code properly. And if you have code that is extraordinarily resource intensive, you know, that does, you know, a lot of work and really uses up a lot of the server's, you know, resource, you know, that type of code is certainly going to affect performance. Scalability sometimes is affected by code. It certainly can. Scalability, definitely hardware and your JVM have a lot to do with it. Outside of that, I mean, outside of the tuning, code, when you're looking to find out whether your code is going to scale well, you need to hit that code very hard. That's where you start seeing, you know, very, very heavy load. You get to measure how it's affecting performance. So, and I listed at the bottom there the things that are the number one problems in code that you really want to look for. File system access, you know, CF file, CF directory. Looping, and whether it's looping over a query or for loops or whatever it is, or you know, from one to whatever. Accessing external resources, and by that, I mean, I have frequent database access, and that is one of the external resources as well, but that all external resources includes calls to things on other servers, which would be web services, you know, remote calls to Java objects or CORBA objects. HTTP requests is really what that's all about, whether it's SOAP or HTTP. It can also be external resources that are local on the server, you know, using COM objects or using external Java objects on the system or CF execute. Those things that you do in your code, all of those certainly affect performance and scalability quite a bit. Locking is another one. You want to look at how you're using locking. How you use memory also has a bit to do with it as well, but I talk about that in another part of the course, the full day. Maintainability, this is one of my hot topics, one of the things I you know, really strive to achieve more than most anything. I think an application that's easy to maintain, you can address scalability and performance and, you know, a whole bunch of other issues just fine if the code base is maintainable. But if you write, you know, the best, you know, the fastest code base in the world, but you can't maintain it, it's pretty useless. Maintainability is very important. So maintainability is basically how easy it is to modify your code, how easy it is to extend or enhance that code, and, you know, maybe swap things in and out, and how easy it is to troubleshoot that code. I also consider, you know, debugging code part of maintainability, you know, maintenance. So why people care so much about maintainability? Can't hear me right? Maintainability, I mean, in my opinion, is the most important part of an application. I've read a lot of different numbers. Most of the reports and you know, surveys that I've seen generally come average out right around 80%. 80% of the cost of owning software is generally maintenance. And usually if a client says, I don't care what the code looks like, I just want performance, if you can explain to them that 80% of the cost of having you build that application is going to be maintaining it, they, you know, if you can really make them understand that, they generally will back off a bit and, you know, let you do your thing the way you want to do it and know you should do it. So, yeah, you really want to focus on that. You want to note that in a team environment, if you have many developers, or if you have, even if it's just you and one other developer, if you have a less experienced developer in an environment as well, maintainability is extraordinarily important. I can't really overemphasize that. You also want to note that, you know, no client ever really knows exactly what they want. Even if they think they do, they always change. Everybody always changes what it is they want. You know, and when I say requirements change over time, sometimes that's minute to minute, sometimes it's year to year, you never know. But it is inevitable. If your code is easy to maintain, obviously it's going to be easy to accommodate the requirement changes. And obviously troubleshooting and, you know, enhancing the code is always going to be a bit you know, easier if you've got a good maintainable code base. So I didn't really get into too many of the details. I think I went into a few of these in a slide or two here. But when I talk about implementation and writing code and your actual development and production environments, that which is what I'm going to try to spend the bulk of my time doing in this session. these are kind of a good list of the topics I'm going to talk about. With regards to the platform, we're going to look at the ColdFusion admin and what it is in the admin that really affects performance and how you want to change those settings. The Java virtual machine and how that and the application server itself, JRun or whatever you're running it on, you know, that's another one that you really want to, you know, fine tune a bit. And it's not that hard to do, really. Obviously, database, you know, performance is a major issue, you know, in any dynamic application. So we'll look at, you know, how you can address those things and the stuff you want to really do in terms of best practices for optimizing the database. The operating system itself and the hardware, I talk a bit about those and a few other, you know, networking and other platform issues. We don't get it too much into the details because obviously, you know, how you fine-tune Solaris is different to how you fine-tune Linux, which is different to how you fine-tune Windows, and so on and so forth. But we do go over some of the hot points with those. From a coding point of view, most of the things I talk about, and this is a pretty good list, I talk about memory usage and how ColdFusion uses memory, how your code, you know, is you know, the performance and the scalability will be affected by what you're doing with server memory, whether you realize it or not. I talk about objects and the importance of objects and the things to watch out for. I think I have a slide on that in a sec, but, you know, if you're using CFMX, you know, objects and CFCs is really something you need to talk about. Talk about variable scopes. You'd be shocked, probably, be pretty surprised, you know, how much the way you do variable scoping, and I'm not talking about memory use, I'm talking literally just about, you know, within CFCs internally and such, how if you scope your variables or don't scope your variables, how that affects performance. It affects it quite a bit. And obviously it also affects maintainability a lot. You know, variables that are scoped and that are scoped properly, you know, that results in much you know, more readable code. Looping is one we talk about. We talk about exception handling. Not handling exceptions and how you handle exceptions does affect performance and scalability quite a bit. We'll talk about SQL and, you know, how that affects it. And with all of these that I'm listing, really, we're going to talk a lot, not just about how it affects things and, you know, what you want to look for, but we'll talk a lot about, you know, literally the, you know, kind of checklists of, you know, what you want to do in terms of best practices and such. Unnecessary code is kind of a fun one. You know, I'm always surprised when I open up code, you know, to do a code review or something, and I'll see 200 lines of code and realize that, you know, 50 lines of code that are somewhere in there are doing the same thing as 50 lines of code somewhere else. You see a lot of unnecessary conditional logic, unnecessary just code in general, you know, things being created and never used, and, you know, things like that. Logical errors is one that's hard to put your finger on unless you know the application itself. But we talk a lot about that as well, how those affect things. So I've got a few slides here that just get into a little bit of the details. With regards to the ColdFusion administrator, now I did say earlier that I'm going to be doing some stuff that is Scorpio specific. Nothing in these slides is Scorpio specific, so no, these are CFAdmin settings in CFMX7. Okay. But, you know, the maximum number of simultaneous requests, your request threshold, and the way it uses memory, you know, the number of templates that can be cached. I can't get too much into the details, you know, with trusted cache and such. I can't get into the details now about, you know, what is the right way to do it. Because one of the things I explain over and over and over again throughout the course of the day, you know, when I teach this in June, is that how you want to set these settings, you know, what the optimal way to set these is, it really, really depends on what you're running on that server, what the applications are, what they do, how many applications there are, what kind of load they're under. All of these factors play a huge part in, you know, determining what it is you really need to do with these settings. And getting into, I think I have one or two slides that just talk a little bit about, you know, more specifics to code. I just wanted to give you something here, a sneak peek at some of what I talk about. So with regards to objects and CFCs, you know, which I'm using those two terms interchangeably, you know, objects without a doubt are the most powerful building block you have in your arsenal for developing applications. There's no argument there. I don't think anybody would argue that, really.
They do have the largest performance hit. Creating an object comes with, you know, a massive amount of overhead. And yes, this does include objects that act as web services. I saw you asked there. The amount, the way those use memory is a little different. And I do talk about that in the day. But objects in general, just anytime you do a create object or a CF object or CF invoke, which creates an object under the hood, that does have a big performance hit. Right? Now, obviously, you don't want to use things that run slow, but I'm telling you that this is the best building block. So, you know, what are you supposed to do? Really, you just don't want to create objects all the time. You know, create them once, keep them in memory. There are certain objects in certain situations that you do want to create as you need them. These are objects that don't need to persist data. They're objects that don't have a lot of overhead to create and that you don't plan on creating very often. If you don't create them very often and you don't need to use them very often, why have them sitting around in memory? More often than not, you'll find, though, that most of your objects you do want to persist. One thing I find interesting is that even though, you know, objects have the largest performance hit, you know, in order to create them, you know, what you have to do to use them, once you have created them, like an instance of a CFC, and you have that in memory, you'll find that they actually perform better than any other building block you have. So there's a trade-off there. You know, generally, if you're finding that your application requires, you know, instantiating and creating, you know, a lot of objects, and generally when I say a lot, I'm talking about, I mean, certainly dozens, usually I'm talking more about hundreds of instances, more often than not thousands. And that sounds like a lot. How could you ever do that? But, you know, if you create one CFC instance in the session scope, well, the minute you've got 1,000 people coming to that site, you've now got 1,000 objects being created. So it's really not that difficult to do. So, you know, certainly you want to, when you're in those kinds of situations, you want to look really closely at how you're using objects and for what. One of the things you can do is look at resource pools. You know, I've got an example out there that you can download and use for free that's easy to configure on my blog. There are a couple other ones out there as well. There are several examples of it. Some of the frameworks are now implementing resource pools to handle what they do internally. There are a few other options you can use as well. More often than not, those entail not using CFC instances altogether. But I go into all of that. But, you know, certainly if you're not using objects, you really, really should be. That's the bottom line. And if you are using objects, though, you want to look very closely at how many objects you're creating on the average request. Looping and recursion is another one that I talk a lot about with code. Looping isn't a problem, just like objects aren't really a problem. It's when you create thousands of objects. And with looping, it doesn't really matter even how many times you loop. What's significant about a loop is how many times you do it. And what's inside of there. I mean, you can loop a million times and do nothing inside of it, and it'll run. You can loop 10 times and do something very intensive inside of it, and you know it's going to bomb out. So anytime, and this is one of the first things I do when I'm doing code reviews, when there are performance issues and scalability issues, I immediately look at loops. I look to see where are they looping and why and how. Whether they're looping over queries or looping over something they got from somewhere else or they're just looping for the sake of it or whatever they're doing. Only because if I'm looking for code that is creating, you know, is a bottleneck, is creating slower performance than you would want, well, you might have it all over the place, but if you've got it and it's inside of a loop, it's going to magnify that. I'd rather see slow code in one place than slow code in one place that's inside of a loop that runs 100 times. So you want to be very, very careful about what shows up inside of loops. That's something I can't emphasize enough. I'd say that's probably second on my list of things to look at in a code review. First is usually actually database, you know, what you're doing on the database. So everything gets magnified and repeated, obviously, in a loop. You also want to make sure you're not looping for no reason. I'm always shocked how often I see people looping over structures, or looping over arrays, or queries for that matter, when there are functions, you know, and syntax options available to you in ColdFusion right now that make it completely unnecessary to loop. You know, if you work with structures a lot, you know, you really should know all structure functions. And there are some out there that make your life a lot easier and prevent you from having to loop. For example, struct find or struct find value, for example. You know, if you're trying to find a value inside of a structure, why would you loop over it and look for that when there's a function that will just, it'll recursively drill into the entire, you know, structure to find you, you know, all the things that match that, or the first thing that matches that. Another big one is struct append. You know, you really shouldn't ever loop over one, you know, all the keys in one structure in order to put them in another. Just append them. You know, if you append one to the other and you can override it, you know, that will do the job for you. And then the ultimate form of looping really is recursion. Recursion isn't necessarily, you know, looping per se. It's code that calls itself, which, you know, is a loop. Recursion, you know, kind of like objects. Objects are the most powerful building block you have, but there are some danger, you know, areas there, things you want to be careful with in terms of how you use them. Recursion is exactly the same way. Code that calls itself is extraordinarily powerful. You can do elegant things with very few lines of code. On the other hand, it's an extremely dangerous thing to do. Just like with any other loop, you know, and whatever it does, every time it calls itself, it's gonna, you know, it's gonna be repeated. So anything that doesn't perform well, it is gonna, you know, really kill you. With recursion, it's even worse because you don't even have a necessarily finite number of loops. You know, recursive functions might end up calling themselves 3,000 times for one user and maybe two for the next. I mean, you never know how long they're going to loop for. It's, you know, oftentimes very hard to put a bead on that. You can even end up writing, you know, infinite loops where it never stops calling itself. It's very, very easy to create problems when you're doing recursion. But when you can justify using it, it is generally an extremely elegant solution. Kind of like what I said about looping, where you really want to look to see if there's a function that does what you want first. Recursion is the same way. Oftentimes you find that you don't need to do things recursively. I'll give you a very good example where maybe a little while ago, maybe a couple of years ago, I probably would have written a recursive function to do something where now I've come to appreciate that I really shouldn't be. And that's dealing with XML. You know, I deal with XML quite a bit in a lot of my applications. And sometimes you want to, and XML is data nested inside of data nested inside of data. You know, it's very, very complex data structures that are represented as strings, obviously. But, you know, sometimes you need to drill into that, and you don't care where you're going, you just want to find, you know, certain types of data inside of that XML variable. You can write something that's recursive that'll do that, and that's fine and good, but, you know, in XML you have XPath. And oftentimes it turns out that rather than recursively drilling into the entire thing, you can use XML search and a single XPath statement, and you can just let the XML parser return all the things you're looking for without having to do any looping whatsoever. And you find that even if it takes you a little bit of extra time to write that XPath statement, the performance is outstanding. And you know, it generally will do exactly what you want without you having to worry about magnifying problems or, you know, slowing things down or whatever. And it's easy to maintain because you have one state to deal with. So that's another. You know, that's just one example. There are a lot of other places where I find it, you know, oftentimes isn't necessary to do. More often than not, it's more a matter of really just being careful what you're doing inside of it. These all the technical slides. Yeah, so those are the only slides I threw in there. I was only supposed to talk for 20 minutes, and I know I've gone over. But, that is actually like a microscopic slice of what I'm planning to cover, you know, in the full day. We get pretty hands-on, pretty into the real nitty-gritty details of, you know, a lot of the things that affect performance and things you can be doing in code. You know, I come from a background of not just being a developer and you know, well, I wear about 20 hats, but, you know, one of the things I've done, you know, arguably more than anybody on the planet, you know, I've done a lot of, is code review. You know, I did code reviews on behalf of Allaire and Macromedia and Adobe, and I've done a lot of code reviews, and I do them for clients all the time. And, you know, one of the pieces of advice and words of wisdom that I always give, I try to give, you know, students anytime I teach something, but certainly in this class I definitely will give and will emphasize, is that the absolute best way to get really good at writing code
is to look at really bad code. You know, seeing what does and doesn't work, and or did or didn't work for other developers, even looking at your own code. You know, to, if you have code lying around somewhere that you wrote 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, or more, go open it up and take a look at it. It's amazing, you know. No matter how good you think you are, or how much you think you've finally gotten to the point where, you know, you're really doing everything exactly the way, you know, you think you should be, when you look at code you wrote, you know, several years later, it's unbelievable how many things you did that you think, God, what was I thinking? You know, I would never write it this way now. And definitely looking at other people's code, it teaches you a lot. Not just what not to do. I mean, you see a lot of good things in other people's code as well. But knowing what not to do makes it much, much easier to do the things you should. So that's definitely something I emphasize and talk a lot about in the class, and we look at a lot of examples. And you know, I'm not telling people if you bring code to the session, I'm going to do a code review and tell you this is horrible, that's horrible, anything like that. But definitely, I encourage people to bring code, and we can just discuss. You know, as groups or one-on-one, you know, we'll just look at, well, how could we have done this better? You know, or what, you know, why did you do it this way as opposed to that way? Where usually it's not ever a real matter of you know, better or worse. It's more a matter of what the trade-offs are. So that's you know, what I wanted to give you guys as a little preview of what it is I plan to do all day that day. You know, it's on the 26th, and you can go to CF, united.com if anybody's interested in registering. I'm seeing in the pod people asking whether or not I can produce a document of this. I mean, I certainly can produce this document. I mean, I think this is being recorded anyway. The materials themselves for the full day, I hadn't really thought about that, to be honest. One thing I would definitely have to do is talk with with TerraTech and see what they, you know, what, if anything, they plan to do with the materials from the full-day hands-ons. I know they recorded and produced things for the, you know, the main sessions. I don't know about the hands-ons. That's a good question, John. Do internal functions like struct find
while looping, what makes them faster?
Well, I mean, I really don't, you know, I'm really not the right person to say what exactly the server is doing under the hood, you know, when you call any given function, but it definitely is optimal. Cold Fusion is an abstraction layer on top of the underlying Java engine. And when you call a function that does something for you, that's built in, rather than writing the CF code to do it, the server has a lot less to do. It's going to use its own native code, so everything will stay in pure Java at that point when it actually executes. You're also going to find that, you know, it's not having to set as many, it won't use as much memory because it's not creating the variables for counters and so on and so forth. So why reinvent the wheel? I mean, if it's got one that's something that does it for you, that just means if nothing else, you're going to do it in one line of code by using that function as opposed to, you know, even if it's three lines of code to do the loop, it's still three lines as opposed to one. If you get in the habit of using these functions, you know, you'll find your code is probably a little bit tighter. Any other questions? I'll turn my audio off and start chatting unless anybody has anything they'd like me to answer verbally. Am I going to go over frameworks and their performance? Wow, that's a good one. I thought about doing that. I don't know that I'll go over all of them. I think I might come with a few of them and play with them. Performance with frameworks kind of depends on what framework you're using and how you use it. I think certainly I will talk about the pros and cons. I mean, frameworks offer some benefits, and you know, whenever you introduce anything to an environment, you know, there's going to be overhead, and frameworks have some overhead as well. That's not to say that the overhead outweighs the benefits. For some people it might, for some situations it might, and for some it won't. But I definitely, certainly if anybody comes and, you know, takes the class and says, I would like to take a look at how this is, you know, this framework is affecting performance, definitely we will do that. Queries. So yeah, there we go. I assume what you're asking is whether or not, well,
Components will perform best if you create a component and put it in memory and don't keep recreating it. Queries are going to run as fast as they run. You know, that's a database thing and data communication thing. You should have your queries inside of your components just to keep them outside of your display layer. You keep them in a business layer, which should be CFCs, really. And, you know, certainly what's going to affect performance more than anything in your queries, other than the SQL itself, would be using CF query param. You really want to do that because it's going to create prepared statements for you, which is just a better way to do the database connectivity. That's right. Ray is absolutely right. If you only need it once, make it once. Terrific. And if you can cache the queries, definitely, you know, if you use it all over the place, cache it. CF query param versus query caching. Well, if you cache the entire record set, that's obviously going to be the optimal thing to do. These are two different types of caching, John. CF query param creates a prepared statement, which basically means the statement itself is going to be cached and will execute a little faster in terms of the server being able to hand it to the database and the database starts running it. You still need to move back and forth over the wire whatever data you need to. With query caching, you actually run the query, take that whole record set, and you persist that in memory. So rather than storing a statement in memory that's just ready to run for you whenever you fill in the values, you're actually putting all the data itself in memory. Anytime you can cache a query itself, that is going to be optimal. Java functions versus CF functions. Optimal use. Well, I mean, I hazard a guess if you use a Java function, it's probably, you know, that does the exact same thing as a CF function. And, you know, in theory, should probably execute faster. On the other hand, I think you're going to be sacrificing quite a bit of your maintainability doing that. If you have a lot of functionality you need in an application, and it's easy for you to have a Java object that exposes all that functionality, you might want to put libraries of functions inside of Java classes. If you're not worried about the maintenance, you would want to persist one of those Java objects, not just keep recreating it. More often than not, the rule of thumb in terms of when to use Java versus using CF, you know, pure Java versus CF, is really a matter of if you're trying to do something that Java either can do that ColdFusion can't, or that Java can do more elegantly. Technically, there's nothing Java can do that CF can't, because you could just write an event gateway, but, you know, that might not be an option for you. What about ground-up frameworks versus CMS frameworks? Well, there are a lot of CMSs out there. They're not all open source. Apparently I'm getting flagged that I should probably just take one more question, and Ray's gonna do a wrap up here. So ground up frameworks versus CMS. I assume by ground up do you mean writing your own framework, or I'm sure if you mean that, or if you mean using a framework to build an app versus a CMS to build an app. Model glue versus a CMS. Content management systems are frameworks. Really, they're just a lot more than that. They deal with frameworks don't deal with the content itself. They're designed for developers. Content management systems are designed for content authors, and they don't have to be developers. A well-written content management system should try to do things as optimally as possible and try to reduce the amount of overhead that they bring. But with a CMS, everything is always dynamic. Generally, you've got everything stored. Every little bit of every little piece of information anywhere, you know, in your application is stored in a database or XML somewhere. So there is going to be overhead. A good CMS will cache as much as it can to prevent that from being a performance problem. But, you know, they really address different needs. If you have a need for non-technical people to be able to edit content, I certainly would say that you want to look at a content management system. And there are different CMSs out there with different performance benefits and drawbacks and different features as well. Whether you should use one or the other, assuming you don't really need the CMS, well, it's probably overkill if you don't need it, to be honest. The one really nice thing about content management systems is that they come with a bunch of features out of the box, and they tend to be very easy for your end users to use once you've implemented them. And the well-written ones are relatively easy to implement as well. But like I said, they're generally commercial products too. Now, most of them aren't free, which means you have to pay for them, and with that also comes support and documentation and some good things, and also means you've got to pay for it. So it's got its drawbacks as well. Well, I think I'm going to turn this over to Ray then, and let him talk. I didn't put my email on there, but my email is simon@horwath.com or shorwath@aboutweb.com. Certainly, if anybody has any more questions or what have you, feel free to shoot me an email. Hopefully I'll see some of you at the hands-on session. It is going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be a massive amount of information that I'm going to try to convey. One day isn't even really enough time. I'm going to try to get a lot in there. So, and thanks to everybody for coming. Ray, I'm going to turn off my mic here and let you go.